It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
It's just the last gasp. That's all it is, Nancy. It's just the last gasp of winter. That's all it was this week, right? That's all it was.
I hate it.
No, it's, you know, it's to be expected. It's like the guest that knows they're like not welcome anymore, and then like just like
I'm gives gonna stay you a, for yeah, one just give more you a day.
Just to stick it to you.
That's
March.
Snow
I'm sorry. That's kind of like when winter hangs on in March.
But then tomorrow it's supposed to be like 70.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that's amazing. I don't know. But you're right, because March Madness, like that, it wasn't even the last snow.
No.
Because it always snows somehow during March Madness basketball.
It's still going to return, but I like it. This is good. This is progress.
No.
It's called spring. It's called renewal.
I want warm weather.
I shouldn't talk, right? I'm heading down to Florida again, so I shouldn't really
talk. No, don't talk about Florida.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And listen, I want to encourage you guys to go back to last week's show. We had James Galla here from EOC, what a great, interesting conversation about the future of what home automation really means, what a really aligned service provider looks like in the eyes of the design coach. So cool.
I recommended him to someone last week.
You should, because I think that they do a great job.
Yeah.
And they've been one of those partners that ever since our realignment that we did at the Design Coach, we think alike. You know, our service provider profile is similar. And again, and to be honest with you, for those of you who've been listening for quite some time, who haven't really been aware of the Design Coach's transformation over the past 24 months, you should really go to our website as well, because we recently listed James as a lifestyle partner for home automation. You can find that on our website at thedesigncoach.com on the In Good Company page. The In Good Company page is where we put a lot of our lifestyle partners. And also Karen Mackey from Chicago Art Source, who does a lot of our art curation, a lot of our framing, like a lot of really, really great talented partners that we have that you can interface with and find out more about them and what they do at the Design Coach, along with their the businesses that they're associated with. So anyway, winter, it's not going to last. You know this.
I know. Is Katie Oglesby on?
Oh, yeah. No, Katie's still out there. Katie's heading into her big season, though.
I know.
Right? Spring. So
I know.
Everyone's thinking about planting and elevated beds. And for those of you who don't know, Katie is Geneva Lakes area own designated garden girl.
Yep.
And she does sort of garden to table.
I love her.
Food, and amongst other things. I mean, she's just so knowledgeable, so passionate, and so fun. Again, so
I am
blessed to have her as a lifestyle partner as well.
One of the reasons why I'm so mad about the snow is because
we got to have her in, by the way. It's kind of time.
Yeah, it is right? time. And I really want to get her opinion on my yard and where I can put raised beds and things like that, because
same.
I really, really want to do that. It's like sustainably,
yeah.
You know, the lettuce, the carrots, the, you know, the vegetables that we eat.
Listen,
regularly
I think
I
this
really
is this is the summer I do my garnish garden.
Yeah.
For my cocktails.
Oh, yeah.
Right, where I can grow all the types of the different kinds of raspberries,
maraschino cherries,
especially the raspberries that go so great with summer and spring cocktails.
Can you grow maraschino cherries?
No, no. I'll just buy Luxardo and call it a day. Right, I'm totally great working out of the jar.
I'm kidding.
Right? But no, but the fresh, I just never realized there were 900 kinds of raspberries. With all different kinds of taste profiles, which is cool. And, you know, listen, using the herbs in the cocktails is obviously pretty popular. I mean, it's been popular for a while, even if it's only as a garnish and not a flavoring.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, I'm back on this AI kick.
Oh, boy.
I know. Why did you make AI face? I told you not to make AI face. And you made AI face again, like most people do who are skeptical. But it's here to stay.
It's definitely here to stay.
It's accelerating. It's not just here to stay. It's like completely accelerating.
It just feels like
what?
Still too new to me to not have its kinks worked out. So
you sound,
and it's only as
but
good
you
as the
sound
person
a little bit
programming
like, here's,
it.
How you, here's how that sounded. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Early, get off my lawn.
Early 1900s. Ready? Hold on. Ready? I don't know about those automobiles. Okay, all I gotta do is feed this one hay and it keeps going. You need gas for that. Like, that's kind of how you sound it.
Yeah.
Like, let him work the bugs out as it like zooms past you like at three times the speed.
And this I don't know.
All right, well, let me.
It's only as good as the people who are programming it.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay. Yes, but.
You gotta watch out.
Yeah, but here's where I'm gonna go with this conversation today. So I'm sitting here thinking about how, you know, again, what 2025 looks like. Because, you know, remember, my mindset at the Design Coach is service the customers that you have now, but also let's think about how the company needs to evolve moving forward to suit the insatiable appetite for design and for ideas. And then more importantly, how to make those ideas tangible. You know, if an idea doesn't come to life, what good is it? It's just an idea.
Just an idea.
So if it stays two-dimensional on the paper, that's not really going to work. And even if it does have a fancy render that you think you can execute, you're still going to need to kind of reverse engineer it and have people put it together, which is in one space, AI won't really replace.
Right.
Somebody still has to grab a hammer.
Right.
Right. Somebody still has to grab a wrench and somebody still has to build something. Right. You can't 3D print your way out of everything. Okay. So... no, remember when everyone was like, we're going to be 3D printing homes. And by the way, they are 3D printing.
Oh my gosh.
Homes. Have you seen the homes that are made of Legos? Printed Legos?
No.
Yeah. They like print the Legos in a 3D printer and then they build like a Lego house with like, cavities that then can be insulated and it's sustainable and it's, I mean, granted, it's Legos, so the architecture is somewhat visually limiting.
I was going to say, Well, I don't know. Legos have come a long way.
Yeah, I still think curves come at a cost Legos.
That's true.
Right? So, I mean, I guess if we're living in, but listen, nothing shocks me because if we're living in, we're finding ways to repurpose shipping containers.
Yes.
Into homes, put them on blocking, which is basically just like a fancier version of a mobile home.
Right. Stronger.
Stronger, but it's still the same concept.
Yeah.
Metal box up on blocking.
Right.
Same concept.
Yeah.
It's just chicer to say you took an industrial container and.
Made it your own
with a saline torch.
Like, have the big doors.
I love it when I see them do those things where they like, you know, they take a shipping container and they're like literally like just blasting their way through the hull of it or the steel, you know, walls of it to create the windows.
I mean, it's never going to blow away.
No, never.
Be great for Tornado Alley.
Never, right?
And you can do whatever with it.
No, it would not be great for Tornado Alley.
Why?
Because it would blow away. It's not grounded. It's not rooted in a foundation.
Oh, sure they do. They have to anchor it down.
I envision all these people tumbling.
Oh, no.
There's no basement. How are you going to protect yourself?
You
go into the cellar that you dug? Like, the bunker that you built?
You have to anchor them to the ground still. They don't just sit on concrete blocks like an old truck in Kentucky in the front yard.
I'm just saying. I don't know. It seems like, I mean... I don't know. Do you food prep? It sounds like you might.
Food prep for what?
The apocalypse.
No.
No?
No.
Because it seems like something that somebody who would be like, they would do that. Like they would, I don't know, that whole thing seems to be packaged together. Or it's the reverse, where it's like they're very woodsy.
Yeah.
And you know, like survive. A lot of people in Oregon. It sounds to me like a bunch of people in Oregon, you know, like Joshua Becker, the minimalist, right? Would just paint his entire shipping container white and have like a candle and like three books.
Right.
And like distilled water, just like trucked in every month. You know what I mean? He just eats almonds and like naturally grown food from his garden.
My daughter was in the National Garden. She brought me an MRE, and that's the closest thing that I have to any kind of prep. I have one MRE that she brought me from.
I don't know. It sounds like astronaut food.
It looks like astronaut food. Yeah,
it's chicken and dumplings in a pouch. No.
Nope. Powdered.
Powdered. Powdered pasta, right? Italian in a bag. No, it's like, no.
But listen, if I'm getting nuked and I got nothing else to eat, I'll eat the powder.
I don't know. If we're getting nuked, you might as well just stand out in front of the blast zone and just like...
eat my powder.
I mean, you could live... I guess it depends on how close you are to the blast radius.
This is true.
That just went dark.
If you're in your shipping container.
I know, but that just went dark real fast.
You can seal it, right. We're talking about AI.
Okay, it is very Teradyne. It is very Terminator.
Yes.
This AI conversation. So there is a tenuous connection here that, you know, and I almost called it Sensodyne from the movie The Terminator. Like the company's called Teradyne. That
Sensodyne is the toothpaste. Right,
yeah. I know. Sounded the same. But there is a
I can see how this show is going to go already.
This show is going to be one creative non sequitur, but it's going to cover the following topics. One, I really do want to talk about some of the really cool AI stuff that my son Luke is sort of teaching me and some of the data sets that you can include. And before you just reach for that dial, I'm going to tell you that it is fascinating the input that mm-hmm. you can provide and what it can create by what you're inputting. You know, we talked only last time vaguely about prompts. Mm-hmm. This is actually inputting real personal, and I don't mean personal data like your social security number. I mean like personal passion data,
right?
Recipes, ingredients you might have in the fridge, those spirits you have behind your bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating what it was able to do this week. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about how we take this AI and we not only link it to design and what it's going to be able to do in design, but the way it's going to give people control over the communication of their design. In other words, how you can use AI to illustrate, maybe not something that you're going to create, but what you see as a way to connect that with a design professional to get you what you want. Or even a contractor. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. I'm going to go out on a limb here. And I don't think it's a limb at all.
Okay.
And good morning, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say to you that within the next 5 years, the acceleration of AI within all facets of life, if it isn't already irreversible now, it will become cemented and irreversible. Because in that period of time, enough people will have experienced the power of the tools. The tools will have exponentially increased in their dynamic approach to communication and problem solving and harvesting of data, that it will be an indispensable life tool. And that the younger generation, currently maybe like 10, 11, 12, who are just now maybe getting their cell phones,
mm-hmm.
right, won't know life without that, without right. that assistance. It is both exciting and scary simultaneously, yeah. because of the resourcefulness in problem solving. If you're always having something else solve problems for you, the critical thinking skills could be something that I think are going to be something we're going to want to watch. Yeah, compromise mm-hmm. is something we're going to want to watch. In addition to that, the creative, you know, there's something to creating in silence. There was, and I forgot who said this, but the comment was, one of the best things that my parents ever did was, and I think this is true, it was true for me, was when I said I was bored, they didn't give me an activity.
Mm-mm.
When I said I was bored, they said, go find something to do. And I think parents these days, if you say that to your kids, you're worried that they're going to get into something bad because there's a lot of bad things that they have easy access to. But there were bad things that we could get into easy access to when I was a kid too.
So. There was just no internet to share it on.
Yeah. You just were, my mom was never relatively right. unaware of it.
We right? just didn't get caught.
And I'm not saying that social norms haven't changed and that it's tough to be a kid these days. It just is because of it's tough to be a kid these days. It just is.
A lot coming at you.
Yeah. But the critical thinking skills combined with a work ethic, what I'm finding is that there's a calculus there that if developed young can almost not be developed when you're older. It puts people into two categories, right? Problem solvers,
mm-hmm.
Action-oriented people who run in a proactive way affecting positive change, mm-hmm. or reactive people who need time to process solutions offered by others, and usually their reaction time is too late.
There's one other category.
What? Oh, okay, what's that?
The problem makers.
Oh, yeah, those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Although if you're proactive, you can spot them right away. If you're reactive, sometimes you can be their victim.
Right, right.
So you got to watch for that. That's a totally different show.
But I mean, refusal to move forward is especially in an industry that is moving forward quickly.
Well, and it seems like everything's moving forward quickly. I mean, think about like where we're at right now. The status quo is being upended, and it will continue to be upended across the board.
Right.
And that's making a lot of people nervous, except the people who were not happy with status quo.
Right.
Okay. Because listen, whenever there's a wall somewhere, this is a good life lesson for everyone listening. From Grandpa Coach. Okay. Whenever there's a wall, there is a reason it's there, because somebody wanted it there.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a barrier to entry, if there's a gate, there's always a reason why that gate exists. It just didn't just get created.
Right.
And then there's also somebody benefiting from that gate. Got to remember that. Somebody's benefiting from the barrier, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's always somebody benefiting from the regulation or not benefiting from it, right? Like, it just is. Whatever that might be. And so as the status quo gets upended and as AI finds its way into what I want to share with everyone today, which is the really interesting ways that what all of these future data sets are going to provide, even the ones that you provide for the input, which I'll get into if you guys are not familiar with how to do that. I was not. I learned this week. The ways that can all of a sudden, in a very exciting way, open up all sorts of new ways to communicate and create. It's like AI will not dampen your creativity, but open up new pathways to information so that you can create. So what it's going to do is anybody who is creating in a traditional way, it is going to challenge that. You mentioned that when we did the AI show a couple weeks ago, you mentioned artists.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is 100% going to challenge artists.
Yeah.
100%. Okay. Now, will there always be a love for the pure singer-songwriter? But AI might help that singer-songwriter with the lyrics. It may. In fact, it's probably going to.
It's probably already doing.
It's probably already. You know, you're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
So that tool is helping them.
Does that make it authentic?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. If they used a tool, I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
I learned this week and I was blown away. There's this device that the masters artists used that is very little known, but it's this tool that they would use in the field. That's an optical device. And many of the masters in art used these optical devices, where what it does is it takes and reflects what you see in the landscape or what you're drawing into another optical device that then almost projects it down onto your canvas or paper.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, the artist was able to trace the image
mm-hmm.
right onto the canvas.
Okay.
By a way of reflecting what they were seeing in the field onto a canvas. And now it's known that a lot of the masters use these optical tools. What in essence for them was the latest technology.
Right.
Okay. To enhance their skill sets. Like, we're all now fairly confident that a lot of the master's artworks that you see might have used some optical tool to be able to translate the image that they saw onto paper.
But that wasn't replacing.
It wasn't, but it was adding. And so that's where when you talk about lyrics, it's the same thing. It's like if the lyrics help them rhyme, cadence, rhythm, the inspiration for the heart of the song. In other words, I don't know, you're talking about your, you know, whatever tragedy or thing you're celebrating within your song. The impetus for that story is still the impetus for the story.
Right.
Okay. that's still pure, because what I have found is that a lot of the AI sometimes gets a little boilerplate, almost like Hallmark card, when it tries to go soulful. Like, it's almost a little saccharine.
Yeah. A little. Yeah.
Like, it just, it doesn't read as authentic. So you're asking about authenticity. The delivery that I'm giving today on the radio, or the delivery of an artist, it still matters. And I think it always will.
True.
In fact, I think that there will be a craving as AI begins to play a larger role. I think there'll be more of an appreciation for authentic singer-songwriters, the same way that you appreciate an authentic vintage car. The craftsmanship,
right.
The soulfulness,
right.
The weight of the words, or the weight of, you know, whatever it is, I still think you're gonna get that. Okay? Now, at some point with voice recognition, are you going to be able to take Chris Stapleton's voice, and are you going to be able to project a song that was written completely in AI? Yeah, you probably are. But there's still not going to be a person behind it. Oh, wait, no. Maybe then there'll be a brand and this created AI person that takes the best of all of the country artists and creates the super country artist. And it's not a real person, but people like the music and like the song. And this person doesn't exist in any other form but AI. Now you're talking about the movie Free Guy, okay?
Right.
If you haven't seen that movie, watch it. It's with Ryan Reynolds. Like, you start to cross over into, what is the definition of living if it's all electrical?
Mm-hmm.
If all life is electrical impulses, now you're crossing into a completely different territory. Okay, now before we get out of control here, we're gonna pull it back to like how I learned how to make a cocktail with my son in a different way.
Okay,
and then the applications that it absolutely has to interior design, and the way to communicate creativity to your contractor, to your spouse, right, or to crystallize your own creative thoughts, so that you can build the rooms, build the environments, mm-hmm. and craft the projects that you want to craft. And how does AI get you there? It's going to get you there. It's already getting you there.
You know, I mentioned off the air that I keep getting these suggestions for apps that design homes, design the interior 100%. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I've hesitated to do that because, well, first of all, I hadn't asked you, and I really don't do anything on the inside of my house without asking you. But because, number one, I don't know which one is best. I don't know. I just haven't done enough research to spend my time on it yet. But is that going to take the place? I mean, how do you prevent that from taking the place of someone else? It's the thought that you're only using it to communicate, not
create. No, I think you're using it for both. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Here's what I'm wrestling with, and I'm sure people will argue with me about this, but when it comes to the curveball, like, let me give you an example. You hear a singer on mm-hmm. like maybe The Voice or American Idol, and you know that really unique run that people know how to do? They just know how to do it, where they mm-hmm. manipulate the run of the last note of a whatever, and it's gorgeous, mm-hmm. but it's never the same twice. Like, if they try to replicate it, it's just like an in-the-moment curveball in the song.
Right.
That's going to be very difficult for AI to capture. The curveball creatively.
Right.
Like, if I want to put a conservatory or some, like a koi pond in my...
living room.
Well, no, my pool. Like, let's say it's an indoor pool and you want to have a koi pond in there. And it's some curveball. It's going to generally put a koi pond in your layout. But to really understand how it works with the adjacent rooms, because it's such an anomaly of an idea, mm-hmm. there's going to be no data that they can pull from
right.
to do some sort of best practice. So until it's a best practice, there's no data for it to pull an original idea.
Right.
Am I making sense?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
So if I say to you, I want a two-story library in my primary bedroom, it can, because it doesn't have anything to really pull from, it's going to pull library, it's going to pull bedroom and try its best to smash that together.
Right.
And then the artist or the designer can manipulate it within that.
Okay.
That is a really good example of what happened to me this week.
Oh.
And I'll describe it to you. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about what AI is pulling from And what you can give it to get you closer, that you're providing, that you're just not leaving it up to whatever's in the data farm, right?
Right.
In the data fields. What you can do to actually hone it to create the way you want to create. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And we're extending and we're expounding on our conversation that we had a couple weeks ago about the use of AI. And
yes.
At that time, it was, well, I was just sort of getting into it, and I was explaining, you know, the really basic way we used it. If you want to go back into the archives, lake961.com, you can go back and listen to that show as a precursor to this show. But I was blown away this week, and gosh, I love having kids. And I love having adult kids that are curious.
Yeah.
And smart and funny. I mean, I'm truly blessed. My kids are a total pain in the you-know-what, but I've raised them that way. Like, mm-hmm. Julie and I AI'd them that way. Like, that was our input.
That was the adult intelligence.
Yeah, we input the all of the sass and the passion and the curiosity. But
that's what we were talking about before.
You know, it's good and bad, right? I mean, it's like you get, like, but as they get older and as they're full-fledged adults, you're like, okay, that's their signature. That's fun.
But AI is only ever going to be as good
as
what comes out of it, right, as good as what's in it.
Which is scary, because if they limit input, let's say there's something they want to edit out, something that they don't want you to have access to.
Right.
Then it's only pulling from the things that they want you to see and whoever they is. That's what's scary,
right? That's the problem, yeah.
So while we're in this pioneering early age stages of AI, it's really important for people to get themselves up to speed with the now, mm-hmm. so that as it does change and evolve, you understand how it's changing and evolving to algorithm you, right? As did our social media platforms. It's not dissimilar.
Right.
You know, it was like, well, now I'm all getting all these things now, right?
Right.
Like you were saying that you're getting all these things now because you looked up one thing. Everybody knows that happens now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you log back onto Amazon. It's like, oh, you might like this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you log back onto any one of your retailers. Oh, we found something you might like. Now you're getting emails. Oh, we found something that you left behind in your cart. You also might like this. Like, it's actively becoming a sales channel.
For sure.
But we've been able to see that evolution. And we've also been able to make decisions about opting out of that. You know, we've had a little longer runway. I'm worried AI doesn't give us that runway. Like, it just moves so fast and that we don't have time to catch up. So if you don't start your learning curve on AI now, I think you're going to find yourself, you could be more in a reactive position.
And overwhelmed.
And not proactive.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do with today's show is try to put you in at least a proactive position as it relates to a basic understanding of at least how it's affecting the design industry and how you create. What we did this week was my son went into Perplexity and created what's called a space. In other words, it's almost like a folder.
Okay.
Let's call it like a topics folder. And in this instance, the topic was mixology. And he's got all these other folders. Like, he might have one for, like, you know, investing. He might want to have for mixology. He might want to have for recipes. Like, he might have one for, I don't know, whatever, however many spaces he can create. But that space remembers your thread. And at the beginning of the space, we gave it some basic parameters. Please create cocktails of only involving all five or four spirits, only using the list provided in this space. And he showed me an Excel spreadsheet where he had basically noted every contents of our bar at home into this data set in Excel. And the Excel spreadsheet had every vodka, had whatever we had. Now, you have to upkeep it, right? You have to upkeep the data set to replace it so that the ingredients that you're giving it, for instance, we'll call it your pantry, right? You got to make sure you're giving it that you have these ingredients, right?
Right.
But more importantly, it'll also, if you prompted it, would tell you the ingredients you don't have in your bar that you should get. That's another prompt.
Oh.
And we'll get to that in a minute. But what he did for me was he showed me how to create a space, how to import a data set that he had created based on our bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then we asked it some very fun questions. Create an Easter-themed cocktail menu involving all four or five spirits, with names, recipes, and descriptors. And then it got really interesting. As influenced by Anders Ericsson, who's a really well-known mixologist on YouTube.
Okay.
And it harvested a 5 to 10 drink menu, 5 to 10 cocktail menu, five to 10 cocktails on this menu, with descriptors, recipes, pulled from the specific spirits I had behind the bar.
Oh.
Including the modifiers. So if it was a little dash of allspice dram, or if it was a little dash of italicus, or limoncello, or whatever your modifier is, you know, a popular one people know of is like Kahlua, you know, like
right.
at a base level. Frangelico, for those of you who like your hazelnut frangelico float on your old fashioned. But what it did was, is not only did it do what I expected it to do, which was basically pull all of these cocktails together. What I loved about it was it pulled it from the data set that I had provided, so I knew I already had all the ingredients.
Okay, but that is a what I would call a controlled environment.
It is, but it's not, because it all it did was use my list, but then it pulled from combinations of cocktails from Anders Ericsson.
Right, but because of what was on your list, I mean, if you would have not had that list in there, it would have pulled 150 million different
Which means you would have been running around trying to find the ingredients.
And overwhelmed.
So it helped me create right. with my own stuff.
Right.
Okay, so did it create it for me? Yes.
Yes.
But did it create it for with me with things I already owned that I knew that I liked? Yes. So that, my friends, is what's called a collaboration. Digital right. or not. It's still a collaboration.
True.
So let's just play this out. We're not going to play it to design just yet, and we'll get there. But if I played this out as I was reading the cocktails, I said, okay, well, now I can manipulate this to go not just Easter, because it came up with some great names, like great names. Mm-hmm. Resurrection Rum, like it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Like great fun stuff. I could also do just spring cocktails, knowing that there are definitely tones to spring.
Of course.
You know, florals, things like that.
Right.
Especially in your gins. It created a spring menu that was phenomenal. Now, here's what I loved about it. I then went in, like I always do with any recipe that I would get, whether it's from a mixologist or out of a book or online, and someone says, hey, you have to try to make this drink.
Mm-hmm.
I did the only thing that I can do, which is manipulated the recipe for a taste. AI is not going to do that. It's going to try to do that.
Right.
But the palate is the human authentic experience. Do you see where I'm going? It got me closer to an interesting drink where if I made the drink, which I did do, I made a couple of the drinks and I was like, okay, interesting profile, but I would improve it here. It gave me a foundation on which to improve and hone the idea.
Did you then input that back into?
No, I then wrote it down like, that tastes good. So I took the base knowledge of the recipe that it gave me, added my own twist to it, and then I took that. I could input that back into AI and it will remember that in a lot of my whiskey drinks, I like allspice dram.
Right.
But here's what I don't want. I don't want allspice dram to come up in every drink. And
all
sometimes that's what it will do. Sometimes AI will just hammer in more stuff it thinks you like Instagram.
Right. Like all the ads.
Like all the ads. So what it'll do is it'll be like, they like this. And that's why you create
right.
for the interesting deviations. Not so that you can continue to make the best flavor of vanilla.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if artists want to stay relevant, and creatives want to stay relevant in the new AI, they have to understand how to use it as a tool to hone their creativity in the same way that masters used optical tools to help them draw better to scale. There's a book by David Hockney that is out there that describes this, these optical these optical scientific tools, some of them very rudimentary, that actually helped the masters create these amazing works of art. And we all think they're all hand-drawn. Now, it's not that they cheated.
No.
It's that they used science to the benefit. Another example. Robots that operate on you right now at a microscopic level. I mean, my nephew right now is doing retinal surgery with foot pedals and amazing posture, by the way. Marcus has amazing posture. just what you want out of your doctor, especially when doing retinal surgery. And he's using this highly sophisticated robot to cut what are micro incisions, I'm sure, or micro incisions, to make sure that he's on an effort to try to repair optic nerves, I'm sure, and cure blindness on some level, right? Like, amazing. Is he cheating?
No.
Because he's using a robot? No.
No.
Or is that just the technology available to get the outcome? Nancy, what I'm saying is, it's like, how many instruments were there? There used to be a troubadour that had four instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure there was a banjo. Like, there was like a band. It had a banjo, and the guy had a cymbal, and they couldn't afford a drum. This guy banging on a jug, right?
Right.
And that was the music they could create in Appalachia, and it became known as bluegrass. And then bluegrass influenced, right? And then the sophistication of more instruments began to make things more interesting. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It is about using technology to advance creativity, not replace it.
As long as you're not replacing it.
Okay, that's where this conversation is going to get to.
Okay.
Because where we're going to go is now we're going to talk about, okay, well, then I understand what you're saying. You want to use AI to accelerate and hone and improve not only your understanding of the creative process or the building process or the design process, but what you're using it to do is actually craft something as an ideal, and then you've got to try to reverse engineer it. That's very difficult for AI to do. AI can sort of build in, visually can build forward thinking. I'll give you an example. Right now, you're seeing some of these Instagram feeds are all AI generated. And they're of things like these amazing kitchens and libraries. And they're exquisite imagery. Like, almost to the point where as the technology gets better, you can't tell if it's a real space or not.
Mm-hmm.
Which is scary, right? Because what you're doing is you're creating these ultimate environments, totally tricked, with no understanding of the financial and trade-off and the time trade-off and the materials trade-off of that image.
Yeah, there's no unrealistic rating to it.
And you're saying, right, you're looking at an image and you're coveting and you're saying, you're creatively coveting and you're saying, I want that. Well, guess what? You can't have that. Why? Because no one's ever built it before and it doesn't really exist. And if it did exist, it might be so expensive and so cost prohibitive, it can't be done.
Right.
See, that's hard, right? That's difficult because a lot of our architectural and our creative reference and interior design, we took from things that had been done by someone and designed by someone. Well, now it's almost like being like, You have a picture of the perfect body and you're trying to do workouts that try to get you there. Well, some of the AI generated bodies that you see, okay, in some of these videos, well, they're not real people.
Right.
You can't get there. Some people genetically, you can't get to that percentage of body fat.
Right. And they are generated by the input from a lot of people.
And then even
it's
probably and then Photoshopped again to get them to look even better than what was generated by AI. So when we come back from the break, what we're going to talk about is what are the design inputs that eventually AI is going to pull from? And then how do you take that and create your own personal data set to be able to understand how to use the tools as they evolve in the coming years? Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. I'm telling you, Nance, you're tracking so far with this AI conversation 2.0, right?
I am. I think that I mean, I'm interested in this segment because not that I wasn't interested in all of them, I want to know what your thought process is.
Because everyone's obsessed with AI replacing it.
Right.
Replacing something.
Right.
Them, it, away. Like, everyone's obsessed with that conversation. That's not the conversation you should be having. The conversation you should be having is, how do you personally use it as a tool?
Right.
To create, live, right, and do better.
Right. But that's what I'm interested in
and
your
be better.
Right. And your perspective on that and how it's going to affect the design industry. And I'm just going to preview my instinct on this here, in that you can use all the tools you want, but it takes the human being to make it happen.
Well, and to probably hone it.
Right. Like, AI can design the most beautiful room that fits all of your needs and do all of that, but ultimately...
The best maybe analogy I can give you right now is an impressionist painting versus a realist painting. Like, in other words, a Rembrandt. The mastery of the way that he saw light and the way it hit, right? And a lot of the Dutch masters, right? Like, just like the way light hit objects and their interpretation of that through paint. I'm not saying that AI is not going to come up with a decent copy, but the original signature, remember I said to you, in art, you better be the first, right? Be the first. Be the best. Be the first.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, sometimes just be the first to see something a different way. We'll talk. I don't really know where AI fits into that. All I know is it's going to accelerate somebody's understanding of what the rules are so that you can break them. That's a quote from Picasso. You can break the rules once you understand what they are.
Right.
Right? If not, you're just reckless. Okay?
So how...
Because artists, from a calculated perspective, break rules to enhance things, to advance an understanding or a new perspective. And that's design, right?
Right. But it's also... There's also, in design, there's perceived rules.
100%.
Right? Like...
Which are fun to break.
Exactly.
All the time. Especially at the Design Coach with the kind of personal interiors where we're not worried about flipping the home.
I know. You're like breaking rules every day. That's what makes you unique.
But we're breaking rules or we're creating new ones.
Exactly.
For the client.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to...
Like in my house, this is the rule. And there's design rules and lifestyle rules and the way that they like to live. And that's fun. That's a fun conversation because the formula to that is different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, a hard thing for AI, who's harvesting lots of things. They're trying to get you an answer to something, but sometimes you're just using it to advance it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it plays into this conversation about design.
To help you get the answer.
Just like the ingredients of my bar that we were able to put on an Excel spreadsheet and create basic level cocktail menu that then I enhanced as the mixologist. It did take me in some directions of some combinations I hadn't thought of.
Right.
That's a great level up. Using technology to help you gain a better understanding. That's no different than a telescope.
True.
It's no different than you looking at the stars and only seeing a blurry dot.
It's no different than an encyclopedia.
No different.
People don't know what those are these days.
No, they don't. They don't know what that is.
That was my get off
my lawn
moment.
It's funny when you have to Google encyclopedia. But you're right. Like, think about all of the ways different types of technology, including books back in the day, right? How they all gain an understanding of leveling you to try to gain a better understanding. And technology helps us get there. AI is going to be no different, but you have to see it that way. You got to see it as a tool.
And people are impatient. They want immediate gratification.
Well, AI helps you with that.
Exactly.
Because you can get this stuff done fast.
Like right in front of you.
But you can't treat it like it's gospel.
Right. It's not end all be all.
No, it's a tool. It's a way to help you shape the clay faster. And maybe get the clay closer to the image or the form that you're trying to create. So in other words, if a clay is on the wheel, AI will help spin the wheel faster. It will help shape the clay faster and with more detail. But it might not get you to your finished
product
vision that you as a human being have in your mind. Well, design is exactly the same way. There's a million products with a million different combinations. And if you're not going to, I mean, if you don't want to be style, if you want to be style or trend driven, it's easy. You put in Modern Farmhouse.
Right.
You put in the colors that you're using. You put in the light fixtures that are included in your design, and boom, there you go.
Right.
You got a relatively decent understanding of what a modern, clean farmhouse interior looks like or exterior looks like,
mm-hmm.
as pulled from the data sets that are out there, right?
Right.
Here's where I think it gets really interesting. It will and is doing right now, if you're pulling specific imagery that you like of elements that you love, lighting, furniture, fabrics, colors, wood floors, millwork, molding, plumbing, tile, and your data set is those visuals of the things that you like based on your mood board. AI is now smashing that up and then creating an interior, okay?
Mm-hmm.
With all of your input, saying that you love all of these things. Where it's missing, in pieces like Midjourney, is it's missing the specific application of why, how you balance a space based on the natural light that's coming in. And just because you say you want tile doesn't mean you want it everywhere.
Right.
Just because you like Carrera doesn't mean you want it on every surface. It's missing the play of the percentage in a way that the balance of a symphony of an orchestra might have to push and pull instruments within it.
So it's lacking personality.
It's lacking editing and personality.
But it's your personality.
Yeah. And honestly, there's a word for that. It's called curation.
Right.
It's probably missing the curation piece right. that is unique to everyone's eye. However, if you don't know quite how to take your late, right, 1800s, early 1900s house,
mm-hmm.
and you want elements of it that are both current and traditional, which is what you expressed to me mm-hmm. literally a couple shows ago, and you take those visuals and you smash them into an AI program, of which there are many of them, it will spit out to you maybe something you can use in that you're not finding in your Instagram mm-hmm. or in your in online.
Right.
You're not finding images of what you want.
Scrolling.
AI right. can help you get closer. I know this because I used it with Julie on our kitchen.
So how'd that work? How'd it work out? I know how it works, but
it began to have her crystallize in her mind the things she liked and didn't like. And so she could look at a photo and say, I don't like that kitchen, but I like that cabinet.
Uh-huh.
I don't like that, but I like that countertop. It was able to advance the discussion. And as we began to hone it with more information,
right.
wood floors that we liked, cabinet colors we liked, tiles we liked, lighting we liked, hardware we liked, as I began to input that, it began to get the vision closer. Didn't get us perfect.
No.
But it got us really close. And it took the conversation that would have taken us days to have, and we were able to have it in a few minutes. And it gave me as the designer an understanding of how her eye sees what I'm presenting. And it did it without argument.
Nuh-uh.
Because I wasn't trying to use my words.
Right. Well, yeah.
To describe her eye. And she wasn't trying to then interpret, like, through the lens of a spouse why he wants a particular recommendation. Well, you like this, that's why you're recommending that, right? It's always laced with that kind of
right.
stuff, right?
Right.
What the visuals do, especially AI, is that when you're not finding a style that you just want to mimic, because if you want to mimic a style, you don't really need AI.
That's Google.
Well, no, there's just a lot of information out right. there on Modern Farmhouse.
Right.
But there's a lot. But if you're trying to come up with something really personal and authentic, like what we were talking about earlier in the show, AI is an extremely useful tool for taking all of these, what I'm going to call, remember I called it the ransom note
yeah.
of the client's
yeah.
mind?
Yeah.
And the reason I call it a ransom note, I will explain that. I want to explain this. The ransom note concept is a bunch of clippings
and
that all add up to some demand.
Yep.
And the demand is, I want this. It's the perfect analogy for it.
It is.
It's a visual ransom note of all your clippings of the things that you like. And then the demand, hey, designer, give me this.
Right.
So if you don't think there's a demand, you're kidding yourself. There's a demand. The demand is you hired me and this is kind of what I want. Now, that demand can be like, well, what do you think? But in the end, it's not really about what I think. Right. I got news for you.
Right.
Usually with the client, it's did I show you something that you liked that resonated with you? And whether or not I liked it or not, I just need to make sure it works. That in there lies the difference. Is that, does it work within the design and can I make a case for it? Not do I like it personally? In fact, that's a better space for a design professional to live.
Oh, well.
Because you're truly then trying to be some sort of creative vessel, right, to the homeowner.
Well, I mean, you have to be objective.
Well, yeah, I mean, but listen, if you're like, listen, I'm a sucker for orange, green, and yellow, and I want an orange, green, and yellow kitchen. And you're like, oh my gosh, you do? And they're like, I've always wanted that. Okay, my job isn't to be like, don't do that. Let's go with white. My job, right? My job is to look at it and say, never done that before.
70s, here we come.
No, no, right. Now I'm intrigued. Tell me more. Mm-hmm. Tell me why. Tell me what. Right? Give me who, what, where, when, why, and then I'll give you how much.
That's your job.
Right? And how to make it happen. That's the fascinating part is, I think about in this AI conversation, is as we begin to go beyond using it as some sort of tool, we begin to use it as a way to really sort of refine our understanding of what we want creatively, because what we're seeing or what we want hasn't been done.
And the amount of information is overwhelming.
But the amount of information it can harvest is well beyond what you can,
right,
Nancy.
Exactly.
So it's worth doing. Even if it comes to you with some weird, you know, mashup.
Right, right. Okay.
I have found that when I have put in Midjourney, and I just did this like a couple months ago, where I put in Moroccan, Americana, rural, equestrian.
All in one search?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And it came up with an Americana, Moroccan barn scheme that wasn't perfect. It wasn't what the client, they didn't look at one and go, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
The client looked at it and said, that's cool. I never thought you could smash those together.
Right.
But you can. Remember when I talk about common language of design being scale, color, metals?
Right.
Texture? That, you know, you can get mid-century modern to blend with Victorian if the color scheme is really tight. Those things can exist as art objects within the interior of a really interesting space.
I have a very quick question because we're at the end, but okay. I think this is very important. Mm-hmm. How do you know the app or whatever you're using is a good one? Like, how do you find that?
It's easy to research. If you go into top 10 visualization tools for AI, okay, a lot of them will pop up. Right now, the one that I'm using is Midjourney.
Okay.
Okay. Perplexity is another one that Luke likes to use for some limited graphics.
Okay.
There's still some limitations there, but I will tell you the ones that are specifically geared towards visualization are the key. Midjourney is a good one to start with because it was the one that I'm currently using. I'm going to expand into other apps from there, but I will tell you, it's an exciting future if you know how to use AI as a tool and not fear that's going to be a replacement. Anyway, have a great Sunday, everybody. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Have a great day. You've been coached.